Welcome to Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach, a podcast that unpacks international trade and how it affects you without putting you to sleep.
Welcome to Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach. I'm Lori Wallach. This episode is going to be a little bit different. Instead of guests, I'm actually going to get everyone up to speed about a very big deal that's underway right now that a lot of people don't know about. That is the IPEF, or IPEF. Yep, another trade agreement acronym you actually have to know. It stands for Indo-Pacific Economic Framework. And don't feel bad if you've never heard about IPEF, because it's been a really closed process and there hasn't been much press coverage. And as a result, even people whose day job is to track these kind of agreements don't have many details. But a little bit of information has started to emerge, because just last week in Los Angeles, there were cabinet level officials from a variety of countries in to talk about it. This is one of those hidden policy debates that is going to have an enormous impact on the United States' approach to Asia, but also what kind of trade agreements the Biden administration is going to establish. And it's going to set a model. Just at that big meeting in Los Angeles, the United States Trade Representative Catherine Tai said that this negotiation would create a durable model for other countries to follow. It's a big deal. If an agreement comes out of these negotiations, it would set the rules that would cover 40% of the global economy. 40%. And just to remind folks how this works with trade agreements and what I mean by set the rules. So the international negotiations happen, and there is a set of rules and standards. A lot of it has nothing to do with trade. And then there's always a clause in each one of these agreements that says something like, this is the quote, each country shall ensure the conformity of all of its domestic laws, regulations, and administrative procedures to the attached rules. And then what that means is literally you have parameters set around Congress, around state legislatures, around regulatory agencies, and they can't go outside of those boundaries. So if you get the rules wrong, if it gets corporate rigged, if there's not enough policy space, it is a long-standing problem, because you can't change a damn comma unless every single country agrees. So this is a big deal. And there are not a lot of details, but there are some things we definitely know, and that's what we're going to start with. Number one, the negotiations were announced, this concept of IPEF was announced by President Biden on a trip to Japan at the end of 2021. Number two, they're organizing it in four what they call pillars. So number one is trade. Number two is supply chains. Number three is clean energy, decarbonization, and infrastructure. And number four is taxes and anti-corruption. Another thing we know is that as of the fall, there are 13 other countries that are involved. That includes Australia, Brunei, Fiji, India, Indonesia, Japan, Korea, Malaysia, New Zealand, the Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, and Vietnam. The actual negotiations were launched in May 2022. All of the countries are involved in all of the four pillars, except India said no thank you to the trade pillar. And the press reporting on that, because you got to wonder why do they not want to be part of that? Apparently, they are very worried that big tech interests are going to try and rig what are called digital trade rules in this negotiation and make it so that basically the monopolizations and data abuses continue. And India didn't want any part of that. More on that as we get into the things we don't 100% know. So the final factual thing we know is that the administration says the IPEF isn't going to be like your standard U.S. free trade agreement like NAFTA or the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP. It's not going to focus on cutting tariffs, but it's still going to be binding and it's going to set rules and rules in a lot of really important stuff. And as I'm going to explain, there's some very different ideas, some very controversial different ideas within the administration, within different corporate interests about what this agreement should do and what it should be. But it's good that it's not going to be, you know, another cookie cutter agreement, because studies have shown that those kind of NAFTA TPP agreements push down wages, offshore jobs, help big corporations crush independent businesses, wipe out independent farmers, and have made the U.S. way overly reliant on a flood of often unsafe, uninspected, imported goods that are being made in one or two places so that, as we saw when COVID hit, we're too reliant on stuff, too much stuff being made in too few countries. So we definitely need a new trade model. And the question is this process going to create it? So here are some of the big controversies and the reason we really have to keep our eyes on this. First of all, are the countries involved. So the Biden administration says the IPEF process can create a more resilient and worker-centered trade model. And that is exactly what we need. The worker-centered idea is terrific. The question is, are you going to get that outcome with the set of countries that are involved in this process? And a bunch of those countries have volunteered to join the U.S. because this is a U.S.-led initiative. They have really bad labor and human rights records. Like we're talking about Malaysia, which is in the worst of the worst list of human trafficking for forced labor. And we're talking about Vietnam, a one-party authoritarian government that does not recognize independent unions, jails dissidents, doesn't allow free speech. We're talking about Brunei, where the Sultan has approved punishment by stoning to death of people who engage in gay sex. We are talking about the Philippines, where the International Trade Union Confederation says 50 unionists have been killed in just the last 4 years with the government insinuated in the process. We're talking about Thailand, which right now is under a military dictatorship with enormous human rights and labor rights abuses. So the question is, are those countries that you could get the good worker-centered goal, the new model, out of? Second thing that's really controversial is three of the four pillars of this trade agreement are not being negotiated by the U.S. trade representative, who is the person who's promoting the worker-centered model and who knows the most about trade. Instead, the Commerce Secretary, named Gina Raimondo, has sort of shouldered her way in and taken over three of the four parts of this negotiation. And the Commerce Department's going to be negotiating it. And the thing that's worrisome is that Commerce Secretary is seen as the number one friend of big business in the Biden White House. And a lot of her staff have worked in the past for the big tech corporations. So if this is going to set rules on what big tech can and cannot do, including in our country, that's not necessarily the team you want making any of those kind of decisions. Other agencies involved are the National Security Council and the State Department. But right now, the Trade Representative's Office is negotiating pillar number one, trade, and the other three are all the Commerce Department, which gets to item number three of controversy. Commerce Secretary Raimondo, perhaps in a moment of unintended candor, announced that Congress would have, they envision no role for Congress in this process. Now, first, there's the constitutional problem. Article 1(8) of the U.S. Constitution gives Congress exclusive authority over setting the terms of commerce with foreign nations. So the executive branch gets to exclusively have the right to negotiate, but Congress calls the substance. And Secretary Raimondo basically said, don't envision a role for Congress here at all. That obviously caused a firestorm, and that had to be walked back. But to this date, it appears that the administration is going to try not to have a congressional vote. So this is going to be a binding agreement that sets rules that bind Congress and executive agencies, but Congress isn't going to have a vote. That is very controversial, as is what has been a kind of closed door process. So Congress isn't really sure what's going on, which gets to number four broadly, which is the whole process has been too secretive. The problem with that is when the doors are closed, we know there are 800 official corporate trade advisors. Well, there are 800 official trade advisors, most of which are corporate. There are a handful of unions in there, a couple environmental groups, a couple farm groups. But generally, it is a process that is rigged by big corporations for big corporations. And that's how we get into bad trade agreements like that TPP, which couldn't get through Congress because the public and Congress were locked out while the whole damn thing was being negotiated. And if we want a worker-centered trade agreement, we have to have an open process. And so there have been two big letters, one by organizations, unions, consumer, environmental, faith, human rights groups, and one by members of Congress, 40 of them, including half of the chairs of the committees, the Democrats who chair the committees in the House. And they all said the same thing: transparency, inclusiveness, publish the draft text of the agreement so people can actually be informed and comment. Tell us what you intend to do with this. Show us, have input so it's not a closed corporate rig deal. Then the fifth thing that's super controversial is one of those corporate sectors, which is big tech. big tech wants to hijack this deal. Just to go back to that acronym IPEF, if you thought that was like the newest offering from Apple, the IPEF, you're not totally off. So big tech hopes to take this process and to stuff into these rules using their power, their money, their lobbyists, especially if the process is behind closed doors, all kinds of new constraints. Basically put handcuffs on Congress and the regulatory agencies to, number one, protect the big tech monopolies. They continue to abuse other companies, to do whatever the hell they want, build up their political power, to continue the cycle of don't regulate us, we have too much power. Oh, look how much power we have. You can't regulate us. We're going to do something to you politically. To have total freedom with our data, to be able to target us, to track us, to have basically the ability to do whatever they want with kids' data, to continue their artificial intelligence programs that discriminate against people by race, by class, by age, by region, to be able to not be liable for the damage that they cause through inciting violence, through hate speech, etc. And then to be able to continue to abuse workers, to pretend that they're not the world's biggest transportation companies or hospitality companies, and therefore not pay workers as workers, but make people all contractors, gig workers. Plus, they want extra secrecy protections just for them to be able to keep the source code and algorithms so that anyone from the Labor Department who realizes online scheduling programs often cheat people on wages, to the Department of Justice trying to catch racial discrimination, to national security interests or financial regulatory parts of the government who want to track data for totally legitimate law enforcement reasons, all of that would be forbidden as far as having any information about how algorithms or code work and how they're written. So that hijacking, rigging of the IPEF by big tech may be like the most dangerous thing. And it's only going to be possible if the process stays secret. Now, whatever big tech wants to do with IPEF, here's the one thing everyone needs to know is the administration itself has some different views. So some Biden administration officials want to harness this IPEF process to finally create the new worker-centered model. And again, that's what we need. That's what we want. Again, hard to imagine how that's going to work out, given the countries involved. But coming up with rules to actually help workers in all the countries, help combat the climate crisis, help strengthen the resilience of supply chains so we can get the stuff we need. And so more stuff is made in more places. So if something goes wrong in one place, we don't suddenly find ourselves without the ability to get masks or surgical gowns, as we saw happen when so much of that production is in China now, that when China production shut down because of COVID, there just was not key products we need to keep our families safe. So that's a great vision. Then there's some other Biden officials, some of them in a sort of corner of the National Security Council, plus some outside lobbyists. They've been plotting to try and figure out how to get Asia negotiations started because they kind of want to think about if there's a way to revive that politically toxic Trans-Pacific Partnership, the deal that got done behind closed doors and couldn't get a majority to get through Congress. And they also just want to see if they can get some parts of the TPP alive again, like the big tech rigged digital rules. And a bunch of them are revolving door lobbyists. They represent a bunch of corporations, or they did. Then they went into the government, or they were in the government. Now they represent corporations. And it's not clear what their actual interests are there, but it doesn't sound like the national interest. And then there's a team that has sort of got the geopolitics in mind. Their sort of theory of the case is that we need to lead a process with the Asian countries because that will show leadership in the region and get Asian countries to want to be with us versus China. But the reality is, as we heard many of these countries' trade ministers say after the big confab in Los Angeles, they're not going to pick sides. That's not what this process is to the other countries. That may be what some of folks in the Biden administration want it to be. But the other countries basically said, hey, we're not going to pick sides. We see this as an opportunity. We can trade with you too, but we're also going to be close to China. It's our biggest trading partner. We're living right around the corner from them. It's not neither or. So those are sort of three points of view. And I, for one, hope the worker-centered vision is the one that prevails. But it's not so certain. There really is no alternative but to try and stay on top of this process and to drag into the sunshine. Because if it goes wrong, the results could be devastating. not just politically, that certainly is true, but policy-wise, it's basically every big issue getting played out, potentially in closed-door negotiations with hundreds of corporate advisors. So it's everything we care about, big tech abusing us and our privacy and workers and smaller businesses. It's everything we're worried about as far as climate and the planet. It's everything we're worried about to avoid another total supply chain meltdown where you have doctors and nurses without the basic protective gear they need. A lot is at stake. And we're going to find out over the next couple of months about whether this is going to be a deal that's good for people or for corporations. And it's only going to be good for people if we all stay engaged. And for everyone who wants to know more and to dig in, please go to our website, which is rethinktrade.org, www.rethinktrade.org. And there's a quick take that lays out all this information. Plus, there you can find our very detailed comments to the official docket of the U.S. government. If you want to get in the weeds on what we think a good deal would be and what the considerations to make it a good deal are. Until we're together next time, when we'll have some guests talking about IPEF, this is Lori Wallach from Rethinking Trade with Lori Wallach.